You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
I was looking on Facebook the other day and this GIF came up. Yes. It was a stuff link. The GIF, it shows Māori land ownership from the signing of the treaty onwards to 1975, and it just basically everything
goes
disappears,
white.
So to speak. It was really interesting. It's quite, visuals are always really shocking. But I also, it made me question Māori owned land, and that sort of rang bells in my head. And I'm like, well, how did we get to the point of owning land in the first place?
Well, we didn't own land.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
What are sort of the epistemologies in the Mātauranga Māori around land pre-European?
Well, you had whakapapa to it.
Mm.
Yeah, so you, and there's an element of ahika as well, but it's which is occupation. So you were you were stoking the fires, you were keeping them warm. But you had actual, because we come from Papatūānuku and Ranginui, so our mountains were actually our tupuna and our rivers are our tupuna, so we have an actual connection to them. So it's not as much as owning them as you are them.
Yeah.
No.
That's
how I don't think there ever really was a thing for ownership until the treaty in Te Tiriti o Waitangi, when you see, you know, Pākehā influences on what it means to own land, and that kind of John Locke thing, you've got to put your hands in the soil and put a fence around it and it's yours. We never had any concept. It was all collectively owned.
So would you say, because land was still politicised, very much so, because people had their whakapapa, their places.
Yeah, that's right, they had their territories, yeah.
But in terms of owning it, like property?
No, there was no such thing as property. I mean, you could go and you, if I've heard stories from up home, they would watch over the hokianga, and if their fires weren't burning, then mate, for a while they'd be like, well, what's going on over there? And they'd go over and you could take over territory, but you didn't, and you would have to stay there for quite a while for you to actually have status or mana whenua over that land.
Yeah.
So you didn't really own any land, you just had occupation, I guess, of it. You had whakapapa and you had occupation, so you had ahika, so you did both those things. To have mana, which is
whenua.
That power and power and authority over land, but not in the ability to sell it, because I think there's a difference. Maybe they're trying to say ownership is, yes, it was ours and we had the authority of it, like in that sense of property, but you couldn't have it in a sense that you could sell it, because you can't sell your tupuna and you can't sell it without having agreement of everybody. And that's when they brought in the Native Land Court and made it all individual, because it made it easier to sell.
Yes, so. Yeah, that's kind of my next question. This obviously clashed very much so with European or Western ideas about land, because it was just a completely different concept.
Very individualistic, yeah.
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 And then things like the Tohunga Suppression Act also stopped people's ability to be able to express their epistemologies of, like, whakapapa. So you weren't allowed to say
that's
things
right.
like... Taranaki is my tupuna.
That's right. You weren't allowed to think of those things. It was kind of pagan, kind of out there things that you had all these different atua, all these different gods, and that your mountain was actually your granddad or your grandmother was too out there. And so that got all suppressed. So you couldn't use that to. You had to then it went in, and I was just reading about this the other day actually with the land committee blocks. Was that's how why you've always got to recite whakapapa, but it was always your genealogical. So my father lived here and my father's father and my mother and blah blah blah, so you had to go all the way back to establish. So they were even having to prove that in the early 1900s to hold on to any remaining land that they did have. But again, I was saying too that it was hard for some, because for a lot of Māori, whakapapa is tapu, so they didn't really like going in and telling all these strange people, because you know there's a saying, he who knows the whakapapa has the land,
right?
So there's been lots of where other Māori have gone into other areas and said, I've got whakapapa here, when they don't have whakapapa there.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Two big things which changed the way land was handled politically or socially. And now we have things like treaty settlements.
Yes.
And I know neither you or I whakapapa to Taranaki or Whanganui, but settlements like this where land is the legal entity thing.
Yes.
That's kind of a new concept being used within these settlements. What do you think about them?
I think it's fantastic. I think we need to realise that it's not it's not just for for environmental or social reasons why we do need an economic base within these land. It's for our own spiritual connections as well.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if your whenua is not doing well, then you're not doing well. And if you're not doing well, then your whenua is not doing well. So I think it's fantastic that we're starting to have legal validation, I guess, that these are actual entities that are paramount to who we are as Māori, or who the uri of Taranaki are, or whanganui and all that. So it's yeah, I think they're fantastic.
Yeah, it's like, it is still fitting a social system or an epistemology into this legal system, but it seems to be doing it in quite a valuable way.
All right, the best we can do within the framework that we've got for this time. Because that really, we cannot, like I was saying the other day, it's a square peg in a round hole. It's very hard. So I think for this to happen, and you know, I think we have to remember that as Māoris too, these are small but big steps. I know that, but you know, incremental steps along the way, because we are having to work within a framework that's not designed to accommodate or us at all.
Yeah, it's not designed around the same world understanding or ways of working.
A total clash of cultures.
Yeah. A lot of the media I saw around that time was how ridiculous it was. It's been in the media again, huge amount of double standards, basically. So people are fine with corporations or groups of business people being legal entities, but thinking it's ridiculous that Taranaki or Te Awa Tupua are legal entities.
I think because there is this actual belief that all land is everybody's land. So when you look at mainstream media in that space, they don't like to think that Māori would like to actually have, you know, their land protected and cut off. But if it was, it should be open to everyone. I think there's this double standard, like what's happening up north is you want to be able to use it in the summer and all that.
You're talking about
Ninety Mile Beach. And saying, oh, well, you know, that's part of what we do each summer, and even though it's wrecking the environment. But if that was a private person's land, there'd be no problem with it. Mm. And I think there's definitely a double standard where we're not allowed to have authority and power over our land without sharing it for everyone and making it open for everyone.
Mm. Why do you think that is?
I think that there's still a real embedded whakaaro or thought that everything that Māori have got, they've been given. Mm. They've certainly been handed it from the crown. There's no context given to why those maunga and river have become legal entities, or why certain iwi and hapu are getting treaty settlements. So if no one's told the context and the history and the reasons why, they're kind of, it feeds into this thought that, well, what, it's we're all one people, you should be sharing it, it's for everyone, and why do you get to have, you know, the same old special privileges or special treatment of having your land like this, without really looking at the fact that most land around the country in foreshore and seabed is owned by white Pākehā farmers, and we're not allowed to go on that land. That's private land that we're not allowed to go on, but it seems that everyone wants to just, it's not the same
not
for
questioned,
Māori.
I often think about the Mātauranga Māori understanding of land, and I'm like, is it that different from everybody else's understanding? I know everybody I know has deep connection, identifies with places that they've been to or they grew up. How do we bridge that gap?
Oh, it's like the $1 million question, isn't it? I think what helps is the environmental stuff. I think we get more support around our whenua and our land. You look at Rotorua, they got given back their lakes ages ago because they were completely imploded. They were dead and they were given back to the iwi, and now they've been restored and they're back to how they were before they were destroyed. I think, there's a double-edged sword there with the environmental tautoko too, because then we get hauled over the coals if we want to make money. And you know, Māori have always been entrepreneurial, and Māori have always known that fine line prior to colonisation, but still I think today too, that fine line between making money but also looking after the environment.
Mm.
So when we do get environmental support, then they're like, you shouldn't be needing to make money off that. I mean, we do want to make money. We are like everybody else. We have to have money as well. I think more education... I think it's happening, I think little by little, people are becoming more aware of it, but I think there's still a lot to go into regards of teaching the real history and putting more of Te Ao Māori and what's happening out there.
Right.
You know, all the cool stuff that's going on, because we only see a very small part of all the horrible stuff that's going on in Te Ao Māori or, you know, in the stats and stuff. We don't see this massive, wonderful world. And I think if people, and you know, you'll meet people who, non-Māori, who get a glimpse of that and they fall absolutely in love with it. You know, they're like, oh, I never knew all this was going on. And realising that it's, for me, mana and rangatiratanga starts at home with your whānau and your people, and little small things lead to massive movements. I think it's not a top-down approach. I think that there's lots of stuff that we could be doing. You know, look at all the Māori businesses at the moment. You see this real push for supporting, this is a Māori-owned business, let's go over here, and then also looking after the environment, so you're ticking all those boxes, and you're like, yay, it's win-win.
Irirangi Poho, Radio Bosom.
The Wire.
I realised, listening back to the interview, that I said that everybody kind of innately feels the same way, has this connection, even if they don't realise it, even if it's not defined in such terms as Mātauranga Māori. And I thought this was actually, listening back, it was a bit of a bold claim to make. So I went around 95BFM studios and asked people if they did have a place that they loved or felt connected to or identified with. And just FYI, the last clip in this series of clips is me spilling water all over Amelia. I'm sorry, Amelia.
I'm not very good at this.
That's okay. Do you have any place that you really, really love?
Fuck.
Oh, you can take your time.
Yeah. So I'm going to come back to that.
No, I don't really like identify with any like place. Why should I, you know? There's nothing particularly special about it just because I was born here.
Every time someone starts talking about Napier or the Hawke's Bay, I get, like, really excited because I'm like, I'm from there. You know how if someone says, like, New Zealand in a movie, like, just possibly, people are like, I'm from New Zealand.
Yeah.
I do that, but on a smaller scale.
My place, my special place is Oroku Basin.
Okay.
Yeah, because I spent a lot of time there when I was a teen, having car parties where we just stand around cars and listen to music.
Akaroa, which is in the South Island, because my family's always been around that area, and
you,
it's really beautiful.
Did you
beautiful.
Grow up there? Or?
No, I'm from Christchurch, but we've always been in Akaroa, sort of spent time there, and so did my grandparents and my dad, and
Probably just like my parents' house. So it's because it's that place where you won't ever find any, like, massive change, and if there is change, it's kind of like comforting because it's change that's been created by your parents.
What's your favorite place, your home?
Yeah, I mean, like, if it's the place where I'd feel most, you know, at home or whatever, then yeah, it's obvious the answer.
Were you free? Oh my god, I'm so sorry. Oh my god.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.